Welcome to Not So Different, a podcast from the Center for Biosimilars. I'm your host, Assistant Editor Skylar Jeremias. Dr. Charles Bennett, a hematologist and oncologist and professor in the Clinical Pharmacy and Outcomes Sciences Department of the College of Pharmacy at the University of South Carolina, served as lead author on a recent paper about the progress of oncology biosimilars. We spoke to him about some of the findings of his study and how pay-for-delay schemes have somewhat stalled the biosimilar market. So, Dr. Bennett, to start us off, what is it that got you interested in focusing on oncology biosimilars specifically?
I'm an oncologist. My PhD is in public policy. So I thought that oncology biosimilars would be the key new public policy frontier for us to go to. A lot of my research, New England Journal articles, have been on G-CSF and PEG-GCF and EPO. So I was one of the first authors of papers on G in 1992. Major articles on EPO have been my space as well. So that was sort of a natural fit. And my program is on safety and efficacy. So it was a great fit.
In the three regions that your study focuses on, the United States, Japan, and in the European Union, you saw that they all started approving oncology biosimilars roughly around 2016 and 2017. It's often said that the United States is far behind the European Union in biosimilar approvals. What is your take on where the U.S. is competitively in that area?
2015 is when legislation passed. 15 was the first approval in the U.S., 2016. Then 2017, around the world, that's when these drugs became appearing, both in the U.S., in Europe, and Japan. Those three countries I picked because they are the three largest marketplaces for the biosimilar drugs. They all appeared around the same time. So then say, well, we're about pretty equal. And then we looked at things that we looked at, and I don't think, for instance, even the Amgen material that I read and some of the second European material, you look at some of the barriers to launching the biosimilar. And so what I was doing in this paper is a policy review was talking about barriers to launch. So I'm not worried about the price. I'm worried about the launch. Okay, getting to launch. And then we found at the end of the day that there were significant barriers to launch in the United States that differ from those in Japan and the U.S. just to get to launch before you start talking about pricing. And then the kinds of things that are barriers. The regulatory barriers. The European paper you sent me goes into regulatory barriers. Those are real barriers. And that, by I mean by that, is failing to get approval, complete response rates. Secondly is, even when you get approval, we have these patent litigations. The other thing the no paper mentioned is on the pay for delay. Delay is very real, and you wrote about it in your column a little bit, too, in the pay for delay. And these are very important concerns about pay for delay, and the answer is not so easy. Generic pharmaceuticals to pay for delay with the 2013 activist decision may pay for delay no longer possible for generics. We do not know whether pay for delay is good or bad for customers. Let's be clear about that. The naive answer is it's a bad idea, but there may be, in fact, that the people that are using, that are being paid off, do not have a viable patent. And they're being paid for delay because they may not make it through the court system. Biosimilars is a heavy amount of technology. And when you sort of pay for delay, it suggests at the end of the day that you may not have enough bandwidth to get through a patent litigation. That does not happen on generics. I understand that pay for delay might have to be adjudicated more closely in some areas. If your application is too close to the application of the reference drug, then you're not going to be able to get through there. On the other hand, if it's very different, you will be able to get through there. On the generics, there's nothing like that difference. Okay, so the pay for delay, I think, is a real issue.
Can you explain more on how inter partes reviews work and whether these really are a factor in whether a product can come to market?
Right, and so it's an administrative review rather than a legal review. Supposedly less, and the other thing about inter partes review, whereas a a patent litigation, you cannot initiate patent litigation unless you have a horse in the race. So you have to have a product where you worry about the patents. Inter partes review, anybody in the world can bring an inter partes review. And there has developed this new economy in DC of lawyers that will file inter partes reviews ad hominem on these reference drugs without even being referred to by the biosimilar maker. And you don't have to file it when the biosimilar maker gets approval. And these inter partes review challenges have become a place where people get bought off. So you pay money for the inter partes review to go away because you don't want to deal with those people. It's a whole new level of hurdles that is only unique in the United States. These inter partes reviews, these patent reviews. I cannot tell you, if you talk to any of the most senior biosimilar investigators in the United States, they're on every one of these cases. They are in the middle of every one of these cases as expert witnesses.
Currently, there are 6 adalimumab biosimilars approved in the United States, all of which will not be able to enter the market until at least 2023 because of legal actions by AbbVie, the manufacturer of the reference product Humira. Can you discuss the impact of these actions and what needs to be done?
Rituximab has done the same thing. And Amy Klobuchar has an idea of making it illegal. And when you read the actual Supreme Court legislation for the activist case, it's a much simpler decision. Whereas in this case, it requires a much more nuanced vision. And I don't think Klobuchar is going to, and there's going to be clearly policy on both sides. This is where lobbyists go to Washington. And they're going to be there to see whether she can get this thing through or not. And that's why I personally have been advocating for the Federal Trade Commission to become more actively involved and to review these paid-for-delay contracts one by one. And so instead of a big new law, which I think is going to be misguided, you use those 5 FTC commissioners to see if they can look at each of the various paid-for-delay and make a decision whether it's appropriate or inappropriate.
What's your take on the FTC's willingness to get involved in combating anti-competitive tactics?
Right, and so people always thought that the FDA is the key barrier for biosimilars. I'm saying the FTC is maybe the more important player here. And so when you look at the biological action plan that Gottlieb had out there and all these out there in the policy statements, and nobody has mentioned pay for delay except for me.
Your paper notes that oncology biosimilars have a savings potential of $110 billion by 2029 in the European Union, Japan, and the United States. Is this actually realistic?
The last time we wrote about the $54 billion that was there, we said that was an overcall, and the $110 billion again is the overcall. Unless you fix the system, we're not going to get that $110 billion. And what we showed in the paper is a tremendous amount of barriers to launch that were far more than the simple barrier of educating doctors and educating patients. We talk about, as you people have noticed, this rebates and the hidden rebates need to be addressed and dealt with. We talk about the approvals. We talk about the quality of the product and the time, and we talk about the litigation for the product. And so at the end of the day, the fixes in the United States will be, they need to be very aggressive. They need to be on point, and otherwise we're not going to get to 110.
Well, Dr. Bennett, thank you for sharing your insights with us. And thank you to our listeners for tuning into this episode of Not So Different. You can find additional information in the show notes. And until next time, you can visit us at centerforbiosimilars.com.